54% back Biden, whereas 30% back President Trump, and 15% are undecided.
Asian Americans could have a bigger say in the U.S. presidential election. This is Thursday, September 17th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the voices grow saying climate change has an effect on Western U.S. forest fires. Japan has a new leader. A roadside tool for law enforcement may one day be used in the war on COVID-19. It is all on today's VOA Asia. A new national survey of the six largest Asian American registered voter populations in the United States says those voters could very well play a major role in the November U.S. presidential election. I spoke with Karthik Ramakrishnan, professor of public policy and political science at the University of California, Riverside, and the director of the survey.
So the major points are that Asian Americans are very highly motivated to vote this year. So we see that a majority are more enthusiastic than usual about voting this November. And if you combine that with the fact that you saw a record turnout for Asian Americans in 2018 for a midterm election, all signs are pointing to probably record presidential turnout for Asian Americans this year in 2020. And in terms of where people are leaning, we see that Joe Biden has a strong advantage. 54% back Biden, whereas 30% back President Trump, and 15% are undecided. And that 15% is higher than you see for the American average. And that's because most Asian American registered voters are naturalized citizens. So they didn't grow up in a Republican household or a Democratic household. And many of them have gotten naturalized over the last 4 to 8 years. So there's still a lot of room for persuasion. Now, you asked if there's any change over time. What we've seen since 2016 is that President Trump and candidate Trump now is doing slightly better among Asian American voters. And that's largely due to movement among two groups. So among Vietnamese American voters, he is winning the Vietnamese American vote right now, whereas Vietnamese American voters had backed Obama in 2008 and 2012, as well as Clinton in 2016. He also seems to have made some inroads in the Indian American vote. So he only got 16% of the Indian American vote in 2016. Now he's at 28%, whereas Biden is at two-thirds, at 65%, with 6% still undecided. And so those are the two groups where he's made significant gains. He has not done any better among Chinese Americans, and I think a lot of his rhetoric on China might have something to do with that.
Is there any reason being given, especially among the Vietnamese and the others that show increased support of the incumbent President Trump, for how they are feeling about this?
You know, it's hard to suss out from our survey data. We asked whether U.S. foreign policy towards Asia was an important issue. It's not as it's not as high a priority as other issues like healthcare and the economy. So, just going outside of the survey context, you know, it seems like things like his very strong position on trying to contain China and to take on China might be playing a role, even though voters say that it's not that important an issue. Maybe it's playing a more subtle role there. Also, in general, we're seeing that, I mean, this is a shift that we saw even in 2018. So it's possible that Vietnamese Americans, especially the older generation, appreciate his general rhetoric and his policies of taking a tougher stance globally, as well as on some of the issues locally, including on immigration, right? So you would think Vietnamese Americans, largely refugee population, when we asked in 2018 whether different groups, whether they supported or opposed a ban on Syrian refugees, Vietnamese Americans were among those who were most likely to say they supported it. So there's a lot of complicated politics going on, I think, below the surface that that I think helps account for why we see this shift.
What is the purpose of this survey? I mean, to what end is what I'm saying?
Asian Americans are poised to play a very significant role this year, including in several battleground states like Texas, like Florida, North Carolina, Georgia, Michigan. And in many of these states, the election is likely going to be decided within a couple of percentage points. And Asian Americans in these states are well within that margin of victory or defeat. So this is to show that this is an important electorate. Of course, these populations matter for many congressional races throughout the country as well. So the purpose of this survey is to provide data on what are the priorities of Asian American voters. It's not just about the presidential race or these congressional races. We have a wealth of information on where they stand on issues ranging from healthcare reform, healthcare for immigrants, gun control, and various COVID-related challenges. So this survey goes well beyond just conventional politics.
Karthik Ramakrishnan, professor of public policy and political science at the University of California, Riverside, and the director of the survey. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. U.S. prosecutors charge 5 suspected Chinese hackers and 2 Malaysian businessmen in connection with cyber attacks on more than 100 companies in the U.S. and abroad. Hong Kong files a formal objection to the United States over its demand for made-in-China labels on goods exported from the Chinese city. South Korea's unification minister, Lee In-yong, visits the border village of Panmunjom, the first visit to the border zone since he was appointed to the post. Indian Airlines seek a $1.5 billion interest-free credit line from their government. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Fires burning in California are the largest on record. In Washington state, a larger area burned in 5 days than have burned in any previous year on record, save one. And in Oregon, 1/10 of that state's population was under fire evacuation warnings or orders last week. Scientists say climate change is making the fires worse in the American West. More from VOA's Steve Barragona.
As record-breaking fires burn across the western United States, President Donald Trump remains skeptical that climate change is a factor. Here he is Monday at a meeting with California officials.
It'll start getting cooler.
You just watch. I wish science agreed with you.
Hey, well, I don't think science knows, actually.
Yet science has been sounding the alarm about climate change for a long time, says University of California Merced wildfire expert Leroy Westerling.
We've been doing modeling and simulation for years now that indicates that these really severe, widespread fire seasons are coming. And we're seeing that emerge in real time.
Wildfires need dry plants to burn, and climate change is increasing the supply, he says. Studies show the West has warmed over the last century, and warmer air dries things faster. That means even a normal year would be drier. But these have not been normal years, he says.
We had a drought for 5 years earlier in the 21st century here that was unprecedented in probably the last 1,000 to 1,200 years at least.
And warmer weather is melting the West's water reserves in the mountains. The region relies on winter snow accumulation to provide long-lasting water supplies, says wildfire expert Jessica Holofsky with the U.S. Forest Service.
We're seeing more precipitation falling as rain rather than snow. The snowpack isn't lasting as long with the higher temperatures, so it's running off earlier in the season,
leaving less water when the dry summer months arrive. And warmer, drier conditions have helped tree-killing beetles multiply. All this has left roughly 150 million dead, flammable trees standing in California's forests alone. But Holofsky says humans share the blame for the fires. Smaller fires used to happen naturally, which thinned out the forests.
We have suppressed fire very effectively since World War II, that means there are more fuels now than there used to be. And so when fires do occur, there's more fuel to burn and they're more severe.
Plus, more people are living in areas that are prone to burn. So when fires do break out, they're more destructive and more costly. Conditions will get worse as the planet continues to warm, Hlavsky says.
There's going to be more fire. You know, the kind of ballpark is maybe 2 to 3 times the annual area burned in the future.
Scientists say this year's record-breaking fire season is just a taste of what's to come. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, Japan's Yoshihide Suga was voted prime minister by parliament's lower house Wednesday, becoming the country's first new leader in nearly 8 years, as he readied a continuity cabinet expected to keep about half of his predecessor Shinzo Abe's lineup. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. A roadside tool for law enforcement may one day be used in the war on COVID-19. A U.S. company is working to repurpose the breathalyzer. Developers hope the hardware that today measures the presence of alcohol and other intoxicants in a person's breath will soon detect the virus and those most likely to spread it. VOA's Arash Arapasadi has more.
Designers in California have built a breathalyzer to detect traces of marijuana. CEO of Hound Labs, Mike Lynn, says tweaking that same technology may weaponize the breathalyzer in the war on COVID-19.
We've spent the last 6 years and about $50 million in R&D to develop some pretty unique breath technology that allows us to capture and analyze breath in such a way that we can detect just incredibly small concentrations of molecules.
Hound Labs tested about 50 people. More than 30 participants tested positive for COVID-19 after a nasal swab, but only 7 or 8 of those same people tested positive by breathalyzer.
And this is absolutely consistent with what we know about super spreaders, where about 20% of people with COVID-19 can spread it very, very widely to dozens of people, whereas the other 80% really don't spread it at all or spread it very minimally.
Lynn admits this is all preliminary, but he calls the early implications enormous. While scientists work to combat the virus and develop a vaccine, he says the breathalyzer could help contact tracers identify the people most at risk of getting other people sick. Arash Arapasadi, VOA News, Washington.
India's coronavirus confirmed cases has crossed 5 million, still soaring and testing that country's feeble healthcare system in tens of thousands of impoverished towns and villages. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The virus appears to be spreading much faster in India than any other country, with daily cases crossing 90,000 for the 5 days up until Tuesday. The vast Asian country's total coronavirus caseload is closing in on the US highest tally of more than 6.6 million cases. It's added more than 1 million cases this month alone. The rise in infections comes as the government continues to lift restrictions throughout the nation to try to boost an economy that lost millions of jobs when the virus hit in March. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Demonstrators rallied in Mongolia's capital Ulaanbaatar Tuesday to protest a visit by the Chinese government's top diplomat amid accusations that Beijing is suppressing native language and culture in ethnic Mongolian regions of China. All the big stories come your way through the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. I'm Ira Melman. A World Trade Organization panel ruled Tuesday that Trump administration tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods are illegal, vindicating Beijing even if the United States has all but incapacitated the WTO's ability to hand down a final binding verdict. The decision marks the first time that the Geneva-based trade body has ruled against a series of high-profile tariffs that President Donald Trump's government has imposed on a number of countries, allies and rivals alike. Trump has repeatedly claimed that the WTO treats the U.S. unfairly. In its decision, the WTO's dispute settlement body ruled against the U.S. government's argument that China has wrongly engaged in practices harmful to U.S. interest on issues including intellectual property theft and technology transfer. The ruling, in theory, would allow China to impose retaliatory tariffs on billions worth of U.S. goods, but it's unlikely to have much practical impact, at least in the short term, because the U.S. can appeal the decision to the WTO's appeals court, currently not functioning, largely because of Washington's single-handed refusal to accept new members for it.
How dangerous is COVID-19? 80% of the cases are said to be mild. Young and healthy people are at a relatively low risk. Elderly and people with serious health conditions are at risk of fatality. If you have a cough, fever, and shortness of breath, contact a doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Now on VOA Asia. The United Nations General Assembly in New York City is one of the biggest international gatherings of the year and requires massive security to keep the dignitaries safe. But this year, the world's leaders are not attending the gathering because of the coronavirus pandemic. Instead, they're holding discussions virtually, so the challenges are different. Aaron Fedora in New York has details.
The 75th session of the UN opened Tuesday on a changed New York City. The meetings and speeches are still happening, but the crowds and traffic are not.
So this year, we'll be having video statements delivered in our large, iconic General Assembly Hall. And we'll have one person per every member state in the General Assembly Hall in order to cut down on numbers because of COVID-19.
Yet the new online format has increased the number of world leaders taking part in these virtual meetings, says UN spokesman Brendan Varma.
So actually this year, because it's virtual, we're actually seeing bigger numbers of world leaders that are going to address the General Assembly. So this year we have around almost 120 heads of state that will be giving addresses via video message. Also around 54 heads of government, which includes prime ministers. So we're definitely seeing larger numbers. In the past, we would have had around 70 to 80 heads of state briefing in person. And this year it's almost 120.
New Yorkers who live nearby the UN building have mixed feelings about the absence of foreign visitors this year.
I live in the neighborhood and I've been living here for about 5 years. And it's very busy and also it feels a little bit dangerous at night. So I'm really happy that this time UN is not in session. They just do it virtually.
It's actually a big event here and it's kind of exciting to see people from all over the world coming here to try and help make the planet a better place for everybody. I also feel bad for the small businesses in the area.
While New York City has largely curbed the pandemic with restrictive social measures, a full economic recovery could take years, say experts. A study by a civic group, Partnership for New York City, says one-third of the city's small businesses, or some 77,000 employers, will likely vanish because of the lack of economic activity. The UN General Assembly, with thousands of international participants, could have eased the city's financial burden, but not with this year's online format.
The United Nations is right down the block. Normally, there are hundreds of people who are here for breakfast, happy hour, lunch, and dinner, so it will affect our bottom line.
On the other hand, New Yorkers will not miss street closures and block-long lines of cars stretching through parts of Manhattan, which normally happen when the General Assembly is in session.
I like the fact that there'll be less traffic and congestion.
The absence of that familiar UN bustle is one more indicator that COVID-19 has not been conquered.
But I also think it's a kind of sad reminder that the whole world has been put on pause. I'm hopeful it will come back next year.
Aaron Fedor for VOA News, New York.
This is VOA Asia. A judicial inquiry into Australia continues to probe failures in that nation's COVID-19 hotel quarantine system for returning travelers. The inquiry has heard that security breaches almost certainly sparked a deadly second wave of infections in the state of Victoria, which is at the center of Australia's coronavirus crisis. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Foreign nationals were banned from Australia when its international borders were closed in March. But many thousands of citizens and permanent residents have been allowed to fly home, where they face a mandatory 14 days in hotel quarantine. In Victoria, Australia's second most populous state, the system has been chaotic. Members of a judicial inquiry heard that breaches in security at two hotels allowed infected passengers to spread the disease into the community, causing a second wave of COVID-19. Instead of using soldiers to secure the hotels, like in other parts of the country, Victoria used private security guards. Many allegedly were poorly trained and ill-equipped. Victoria's Emergency Management Commissioner Andrew Crisp has told the investigating panel he thought private companies could do the job.
I guess in terms of a view, I thought they would have been a suitable and an appropriate workforce to use in the hotel. I've worked a lot with private security and the thinking was that well-trained, well-supervised private security in this type of role would have been efficient and effective.
They weren't. The hotel quarantine fiasco in Victoria is considered by many to be Australia's greatest failure in the pandemic so far. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In Malaysia, the coronavirus pandemic has led to an increasing number of food deliveries and an increasing number of road accidents, as oftentimes reckless drivers break traffic laws to meet the rising demand. As Dave Grunebaum reports from Kuala Lumpur, the frequency of road accidents has raised questions about delivery riders' safety.
Food delivery. It makes life easier for so many. Malaysia, like many countries, has seen an increase in demand for food delivery since the start of the coronavirus pandemic. Most deliveries here are made by motorbike, but during the past 6 months, there has been a steady stream of headlines of accidents involving delivery riders. The Malaysian Institute of Road Safety Research recently conducted a four-day study of 11 intersections. It observed almost 3,500 motorbike delivery riders and found that about two-thirds did not obey the rules of the road, and about one-third committed a serious safety violation, including holding their phones in their hands, running red lights, making illegal U-turns, and going in the wrong direction. Khairul Anwar, the Road Safety Institute's director general, says these dangerous maneuvers happen all too often.
It is like a norm for food delivery riders in Malaysia to behave this way because of their work demand and their determination to meet target of the day.
The food delivery riders are typically freelancers who own their own motorbikes. The more deliveries they make, the more money they earn.
The system gives them incentive to speed or to potentially run red lights. Is that part of the problem?
Unfortunately, yes.
Emeril Rashid has been delivering food for about a year. He acknowledges that many delivery riders are not careful enough, but he also says the riders often feel pressure to hurry their deliveries. He says the pressure usually comes from the customers because usually the customers want their orders fast. The two biggest food delivery companies are Grab and Foodpanda, both of which declined a request for an interview. But Khairul Anwar of the Road Safety Institute called their current safety training inadequate, adding that these companies need to do more to promote a work culture that stresses safety.
So we have to embed the safety things into this motorcyclist's mind. They have to be, it's not only about delivering the products, it must safely, safe attitude per se, safe behavior.
The Institute says it's developing a road safety training program and talking with both companies about it. Emeril Rashid and other delivery riders told VOA they support the plan. But the riders acknowledge that no matter how much training they get, it's ultimately up to them to always emphasize safety over speed. Dave Grunebaum for VOA News, Kuala Lumpur.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team that includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy the day ahead and stay safe.